This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago, and our speaker this afternoon was Howard Tillman, the chief executive officer of 1871. Howard Tillman is also known as the public face of Chicago's technological community. It's the home of digital startups. In fact, there have been 500 digital startups, and 200 have graduated from the program and are still going. The program has 700 volunteer mentors. Last year, 1871 hosted 1,000 events and 350 workshops. In fact, they're so busy with technology that they've established a lane simply for texting as people go up and down the steps. 1871 is located in the Merchandise Mart of Chicago along the Chicago River. The CEO, Tillman, announced that a new program, 18,000 square feet, will open at the Mart shortly, in a partnership with Bosch called Chicago Connectori. They hope to push downtown throughout the city of Chicago through a series of digital content laboratories. He urged the audience of over 300 to think revolutionary. He said the future will not be incremental, but will be one of great speed. Those who are in business, those who are in service, government service, for example, must play the whole game as though it is in overtime. Each change, he said, speeds up the next change. So it's a question of how can we control speed as we all become speed demons. He suggested that we ask ourselves, what do we do best? What can I get rid of? Because if we don't get rid of it, or if we don't do it, someone else will. He finished up by saying, forget about business as usual. Make it as easy as possible for your clients and consumers, because if we don't do business and government and service well, people will go elsewhere.
Thank you. I wanted to thank the City Club and say how excited I am to be back. And I appreciate everybody being here, notwithstanding the weather. We can only do a certain amount about the weather. So I'm going to start with just a couple of pieces of information about where we stand with respect to 1871. And if anybody doesn't know the derivation of the name, it was the year of the Great Chicago Fire, which is a little bit like naming your business after the Titanic. But post the fire, there was a tremendous rebirth and renaissance in the city. The Ferris wheel was invented. The skyscraper was invented. That important food group, the Twinkie, was invented. And we think technology today represents that kind of an opportunity for the city and for the state and really for the Midwest. So what's gone on so far? We've grown to about 500 startups now. We have almost 700 volunteer mentors, and this is an amazing part of the process. Each year now we do about 1,000 events and about 350 workshops, which is astonishing. In fact, it's so busy that we've had to redevelop the stairs with a lane for texting so that we don't kill the people while the rest of the people are running up and down the stairs. And we have been blessed with the presence of a number of venture supporters, which is really tremendous. We have all of the major universities present at 1871, in addition to the mentors, so education has been a huge focus, and then all the technology companies as well. So it's become really the center and the sort of the hub for everything going on in technology in the city. It started with J.B. Pritzker and a vision of becoming the central address, the town square. We were the sort of birth from the Chicago Entrepreneurial Center. And what has happened over the years has been the city, the state, many, many corporate partners and sponsors, all the universities, as I said, have all come together to really turn it into a very special place. And it's special for a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is just to understand the impact. So we have now about 500 companies. We've graduated several hundred companies. They've raised over $200 million, created about 8,000 jobs now, which is really the significant impact, attracted a tremendous amount of talent and resources to the city. We are global, so we have reciprocity arrangements with 11 or 12 different countries, which is really significant. And we've increasingly been sort of recognized across the globe, really, as the center and as a hub for what's going on. So whether it's publications, whether it's rankings where people have said Chicago has increasingly become a major place, particularly with an emphasis on women. And our wisdom program has been very successful. We're just starting another cohort of that as well. And, you know, the idea is to make it a place where we can attract capital, we can attract talent, and we can really also attract investment. And the investment returns have been really remarkable. So right now, we're ranked as one of the best places in the country to invest. And I just had someone come up and said he came to this talk 2 or 3 years ago and ran right out and bought some stock that I had recommended. I want to say I don't recommend doing that, but it worked out really, really well for him. So, and, you know, in publications across the country, Chicago is ranked. We're raising our ranking. And if you didn't think enough was going on the inside of the Mart, the outside of the Mart is going to be this astonishing focal point for the beginning of what's going to happen across the whole river. So we're really excited about that. None of this is possible without a team. And here's the team at the Polar Plunge. And it was frightening. Let's just be clear, it was frightening. But we expect to have way more people next year, so we're excited about that. And one of the things you learn, just like in racing, is that the world doesn't wait for you. So what's coming down the pipe? We're just about to formally announce a new incubator that'll be focused on what we call the Internet of Things, or today it's actually the Internet of Everything. This will be another 18,000 square feet at the Merchandise Mart. It's a partnership with Bosch. And we're very excited about that. And it'll be focused on all of this connectivity that's going on, and we're excited about that. You'll hear on Monday a new initiative for 1871 in the education space. And so we'll look forward to sharing that with you. And then one of the other things that's really significant is how do you take what's going on downtown and push it out to the whole city. And so we're building new digital systems and content libraries that will permit us to share all of the resources and all of what's going on there with the whole city, because we want to impact more than just downtown. So that's the background. I want to talk to you a little bit about the future. I always like to start with a little bad news, which is you're screwed, but it's okay. It's okay. Here's what's going on. The nature of changes that are sort of coming down the pipe are so frightening. They're not going to be sort of ratable. They're not going to be easy. They're not going to be incremental. They're going to be very much chaotic, and yet those create opportunities that we've never seen the like of. And so if you're not in a hurry, you're probably already behind the curve. And we think of that in terms of sports language as playing the whole game in overtime, that everything has to be done at speed today, and that speed is the most essential competitive tool. And the changes are really astonishing. So to give you just a little idea of what the world used to look like not so long ago and what it looks like today, and even more importantly, this idea of continuity and the continuum of just how long or how little time it takes for these changes to really have a significant impact. And it's not just corporations. You know, there are about 240,000 truck drivers in this country. Some of them should get out of the truck. There's no question. But the idea is, with self-driving cars and with the other things that we're dealing with, those folks better get out of the way, because change is coming. And, you know, you look in the all kinds of different jobs that we have used in industry and in corporations for a lot of reasons. They're going away, too. So J.P. Morgan Chase just announced an astonishing thing, which is that a machine, a simple machine, will eliminate not just millions of transactions, but hundreds of jobs as well. And I know we have a fair sampling of lawyers in the office. I was a lawyer once. And here's another sort of scary piece of news. A lot of the redundant stuff, a lot of the ministerial things that are out there are going away. Now, the good news is that ought to free us up to do smarter things and to be doing more challenging things. And that's the hope. We have a new app that's pretty interesting. You dial on your phone a business call, but then you conference in Tetra. And what it does is it transcribes and listens to the entire conversation for you. So this is a pretty interesting thing, and it's also part of what's happening, which is how change is changing. And so we call it autocatalytic. And what that means is that the rate of each change speeds up the next change. And so when businesses today talk about how well they're doing, they talk in terms of speed. Speed is velocity. What they need to be doing is talking about a different thing. And it's how fast are you getting faster? Because we have 500 companies and thousands of people every day, and they're just looking to eat your lunch. Not this lunch, but your business lunch. And so the idea that you need to be looking at your business in a different way is really significant. And the way to think about technology today has changed as well. We used to say, how can I use some of these newfangled technologies to do what I'm doing better? And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not enough. What you need to be saying is, how does this new technology enable me to do things I could never do before? That's a different way of looking at technology, and it's really, really critical. So just to give you an instance of that, today Yoda is the most 3D printed object, but to understand what's going on is to understand that 3D printing permits us to do an astonishing thing. We can make objects now that are lighter than aluminum, stronger than steel, that you could never do before because the metal wouldn't sit still while you were fabricating the pipe. But today, we can design and build these amazing things. And they're not only stronger than steel, but they retain and are able to be flexible as well. So it's just astonishing. And that's just one of these many instances. And this is not tomorrow. This is yesterday. And so when you're looking at your business, what you need to be saying is, what do I do best? What can I, by the way, get rid of or push out or outsource because it doesn't offer any value to my business? So what can I do best? What's the edge that I have? And frankly, if you don't do it, someone else will do it to you. And if there was anybody who ought to be sort of resting on his laurels, it would be this guy. And what's he worried about? He's worried about somebody coming along and taking away what he's built and the value that he's created. And so this technology thing is a pretty astonishing thing. We understand it, we're challenged by it, we're attached to it, and we're also a little bit threatened by it because a lot of our social institutions and a lot of the regulatory tools and things that we've had have not even remotely kept pace with it. So we see it as sort of the biggest baby around. And, you know, it's powerful, but it's very immature. And so if this is unsettling, let me just suggest this, that it's better to be unsettled than to be history. And so we get this about change. And we understand that actually no one likes change except, you know, small children. And we've just added several nursing rooms in 1871, so I have a particular interest in this. But look, change is not so hard. What's so hard is the idea of overcoming the resistance to change and to leaving behind what worked really well for you. Really well for you in the past, but not going to be the case going forward. And so these business models are constantly changing, and it's really interesting. This is Uber in Brooklyn, more than 1 million rides a month. Uber is somebody that 8 years ago we didn't even know what that word meant in this context. It's now worth more than 80% of the Fortune 500 corporations. But it's a continuum, and so tomorrow we'll be talking about Airbnb for cars. What does that mean? Well, we don't use our cars very much at all. They just sit. They sit in the garage. They sit at work, wherever. And so because we're becoming less and less attached to these vehicles, these new kinds of services are growing up. Mm-hmm. Sharing is a whole concept that we're just beginning to explore. But again, the models keep moving. So we have Divi here, and we're pretty good at Divi. And some of us are, you know, really exceptional at Divi. But the problem with Divi was NIMBY, which was not everybody wanted a rack in front of their house. Not everybody wanted a rack on their block. So what they figured out in some other countries is you don't need the rack. You need a control on the back wheel that your phone activates, and you leave the bike anywhere. Now we have a different set of complaints about this, but think about it for a minute. Just walking down the street, grabbing the bike, hitting your phone, and going. This is pretty powerful. And so all this stuff that used to be science fiction is here today, whether it's the Dick Tracy watch, the Jetsons. This is a drone taxi in Dubai. We've got, this is the Wicked Witch, but we've got mirrors now that provide all kinds of information, all kinds of guidance. If you think that the TSA sucks, which we all think, this is a new device, 2 seconds. Looks into your eye and identifies you. 2 seconds to go through TSA. And the robots are coming big time. And so whether it's this guy, which either will go home on its own or follow you to work in case your briefcase is too heavy, or this guy, which will deliver pizzas and cold drinks for Domino's, or the drones, which are fairly stupid. But here's something to think about. In New York, it takes about 45 minutes in rush hour to get an ambulance to somebody in Midtown. The drones get there in 14 seconds. So we're getting to the point where our expectations and some of these things, some of this technology, is really going to change the way we look at life. And it's exciting. So where does that start? Well, it starts with time. None of us has enough time. This is a New Yorker cartoon, which I thought was interesting. Actually, it would be better to be locked away just so you could catch up with Netflix instead of, all right. But the idea is just leave me alone, okay? I mean, the planes used to be a sanctuary. Now with Wi-Fi, it's like not 1 minute of a break on time. So time, all right? This business provides customer support online in 3.5 minutes. Try to be in a business that says we'll get back to you in 24 to 48 hours. Here's a flash. You won't be in business much longer. This is a very ugly display, but in roughly 1 to 3 minutes, it downloads a full-length movie to your laptop to take on the plane. Yahoo just announced that they're going to send the email before you do, okay, that they've actually developed technology that will pre-ship it. So we're in a hurry, and that's going to continue, and it's moving over into the ways we do business. So messaging is trumping big-time email. Email is on its way out. Why? One, we don't open email. Two, we don't respond to it in any kind of realistic time. So we're in this new right now economy. This company sells LPs for those of us of a certain age. Maybe the kids think of it as vinyl. But basically, this is a transaction that takes 1 second. Each day they say, hey, here's the new offering. You click yes or no. If you click yes, it'll be there in 2 hours. If you click no, that's the entire extent of the transaction. Here's how you order lunch these days. Look at the menu in the morning, press the button, 1 second, lunch will be there at 12:15. And again, as soon as we think, all right, well, this phone is pretty fast, audio, voice, is 4 times faster. It's an accelerator. And so we're going to see more and more agents. We're going to see a migration already to this idea, basically, of mobile everything. And it's all part of this I want it, and I want it right now economy. And so we're seeing that more and more information can be made available to us in context. So products can talk, locations can talk, the mall, the bus stop, the train station, the football game. This is one of the newest things that we just rolled out for the 76ers. You look at the jersey through your phone, up pops a buy button. You buy the thing, and it'll be home before you are successful in getting out of the parking lot from the game, okay? So what's the message? The message is every single business is going to be held to this standard. You got to deliver what I want, when I want it, when I'm ready to buy it. If not, you're toast. And so in the game industry, that's 2 minutes to download a new game. And here's what's really interesting. All of the customers transfer what they experience in any channel, in any transaction, to the rest of their lives. So if it's 2 minutes to download a game, how long do you think somebody wants to wait to make a purchase or to set up an appointment or to do an order? So what's going on is the expectations constantly grow, and the way that was great yesterday is just so what today. And that's the nature and the pace of this acceleration. Now, they did a recent survey of, is there anything in the world that we're willing to be pretty much satisfied with for a long period of time. It's not a raise, believe me. It's not a vacation. It's not, pretty much nothing. What do you think was the one persistent thing where when we make an adjustment, we're willing to say, I'm pretty happy about this for the whole rest of your life. Anybody want to guess? Okay, here it is. It's your commute. And the truth is, I mean, they surveyed millions of people, and this is the only thing that if your commute is shorter, you're actually going to be a happy camper every single day for the rest of your life. You were just talking about several hours to get downtown. What? What's going on? Nobody wants to wait. And not wait for hours, but not even wait for minutes. And so we're seeing a lot of changes in behavior. We're seeing people that are willing to order online and more stop by the store, pick the stuff up in the parking lot. And again, this idea of click and collect is pretty substantial. Amazon makes it its business to always be ahead of the game. So this is a little button called the dash button. It costs you a dollar, but then they give you the dollar back the first time you press it. And you put this button on your washing machine, and when you pour the last of the Tide out, you press the button and the new container of Tide will be at your doorstep in about an hour and a half. Now think about it for a minute, okay? First of all, you don't care what it costs. Second of all, you're not looking in the newspaper to see if Downey has a coupon that 4 days from now you can take to the grocery store and save 15 cents. And 200 brands have figured this out already with these buttons. And in most cases, it's pretty obvious where the button should go. In some cases, it's not that clear. And so we're still working on some of this stuff, but the idea of buttons is pretty hot, and the message is really, really simple. Today we care about speed and access and convenience, and a lot of the other things that were really important to us are less important today to huge portions of the population. Amazon has a store here. You use your phone to sign into the store. You pick up whatever you want in the store. You walk out. That's the whole transaction. You get a bill on your phone. And so there's a new way to think about what's going on, a new way that your business has to measure and look at the way you perform. And we call it the customer effort score. And what it means is, and again, this is what these 500 companies are doing every day at 1871. They're looking at the way you do their business, your business, and saying, we can do it better, faster, easier, more productively. And so if you're not doing the same thing, then you're going to be left behind. This is a great Liberty Mutual commercial if you haven't seen it. She used her phone to do an estimate of her car, so she's at the beach with her kids. This lady is being driven crazy trying to keep her kids at the body shop from killing themselves or being killed. What's it all about? It's about friction. It's about how can I make these things easy and fast. And it's all driven by data. And data is increasingly important to us. We used to think that the internet was all about low cost and access, and it certainly is, but what it's really about is measurement. What it's really about is the ability to say that going forward, I'm going to know a great deal more, and it's going to help me be smarter. And so the future looks like two words to us. The first is transparency, that every business and every competitor and every vendor will know everything there is to know about your business, what you're doing. And two, efficacy, they'll know how well you're doing your business. And if you're not doing it well, they can go elsewhere because they have virtually unlimited choices. So think today about what we think loyalty means. So loyalty is a peculiar thing, but today what it means is I just haven't seen a better offer. I haven't seen somebody doing it better yet. And so in a lot of industries, they haven't even woken up to this prospect. One is the doctors. The doctors honestly think that people are focused on things like their credentials. And the truth is, if you have a great receptionist, you're way ahead of the game, okay? But it's even worse because if you're stuck in a big city and you can use your phone to get in front of a doctor in a minute, that's what you're going to do. That's what's going on. And so, again, our ideas about what a medical transaction looks like, what kind of doctor we want to deal with, I mean, they're changing radically. We would rather deal, and this is, of course, what we learned with ATMs, we'd rather deal with a machine. And so when you're looking at your business, again, sort of an interesting analysis, it's not enough to look inside, because you and your competitors will know everything within your bailiwick. What's critical is to look at the edges, to look at who's going to come along and change the entire business, change the entire way we think about these things. And so a lot of businesses today have good analytics, but analytics are like thermometers. And the game is about being the thermostat. It's being in control. It's being proactive, getting ahead of the curve, instead of saying, well, that was a great quarter, because that's not enough. The ball and the game keep moving. And this idea of attention is really central to this. This is about the only thing we've got left to spend, the only way that we really connect and commit ourselves to a new industry or a new choice or a new service or product. We make time in this ridiculously busy lives of ours for what we're interested in. I don't know. I always like this toy. This is Stretch Armstrong. So I no purpose other than that. But this idea that you're competing with competitors is not a sufficient analysis. You're competing with everything that gets in the way of engagement, attention, connection to these customers, to the people you serve. And it's not just customers. And every bit of this, by the way, is absolutely as relevant to a B2B transaction, business to business, as it is to business to consumers. And this attention thing is just getting worse, actually. We did a survey about 4 years ago, and we were holding our own relative to the goldfish in terms of attention, but the goldfish, as of last month, was still in control. We were losing, all right? So what does this mean? Well, in the world today, what it means is you have to show me value. You have to show me a reason to deal with you, to use your product or service. And it's really simple. It's how are you going to save me time, money, make me a better decision maker, increase my productivity, change my status? And if you don't do that, I just don't care. And so this idea of engagement is really critical. And here's a flash. The context in which you're talking to me in this new digital world is more important than what you say. We know this as parents, because our kids, no matter how wise we are, don't give a shit if they're not listening, right? So what's it about? It's about, am I reaching the right customers? Is my message getting through? And are they changing their behaviors so that I have secured a real impact? Everybody's got not enough money to go around, so you have to be smart these days. And a lot of companies are still spending the lion's share of their attention on the content, media and things, and not measuring carefully, not figuring out how do I get it in front of the right people? How do I make what we call my reach smart, okay? How do I make sure that it's engaging and timely and in the right time and place and that it's relevant and customized now? So what do we need and where do we need it, which is everywhere, and when, all of these things. So we've got companies here, some great companies. This company used to be called Context Media, now it's Outcome Health, but they figured out that you spend more time in the doctor's waiting room by far than you do with the doctor. So if they give you information on video in the waiting room, they're actually providing a pretty real service. What do they realize? That the context is more important than anything. Under Armour is buying a lot of these fitness band companies because, again, you're very ripe. If we know you're exercising, you're very ripe for their kinds of products. And so today, if you're a traditional advertising person, if you're just using the old ways of doing business, you're paying an actual penalty. It's because you haven't figured out how to engage with me, how to successfully connect with me. And the only thing worse is marketing. Marketing is so terribly troubled that, you know, it's just not worth it. Because it's random, and what we have to do is engage, not aggravate people. And so in the old world of agencies, you could take 90 days and run a flight and hope that something, you know, good worked out. And as a result of sort of not catching up with the digital world, all the big CPG companies, all the consumer marketing companies are getting killed. I mean, they're losing share to niche companies, to smaller companies, to companies that have better defined their connection to the customers. And a lot of it is driven by mobile. A lot of it is driven by digital. But mostly it's driven by connectivity. Because the kids are virtually 100% connected. But so are all of us. This is a survey we did. 80% of us look at our phone within 15 minutes of getting up in the morning. I think the other 20% are just lying. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. But we look at our phones 163 times a day. That's about 3.5 hours. And it's not just the phones, right? The cars are connected now. I love the car guys who say, please don't text when you drive, very sincerely. And then they show you 4,000 other things that can distract you in your car. This sends a thing to your car that says, who's ringing your doorbell, if that wasn't discouraging enough. Now, what's going to happen is in Saudi Arabia, they're going back to sort of streamline buses. In Atlanta, they're building tracks that your car can follow autonomously. We're seeing new devices that will help solve this issue of what do you do at the train station to get to work. And it's all driven by the fact that we're trackable now. We're creating enormous amounts of data. In the stores, we used to not know in bricks and mortar who you were. Now we know. We can see you moving around. We can see where you spend the most of your time. And it's really become amazing. We can see how effective our window advertising is, how long you stay in the store, whether you're a frequent shopper or not. And then ultimately, our phones are just the beginning of this idea of the connectivity of everything. This is one of the reasons we're opening this new lab, because the smart home is here, the smart car is here, but the devices are getting smarter and smarter. So we put these trackers on waitresses, actually on their trays, just to be clear, in the casinos to see if they were properly allocating their time, if they were serving the high rollers rather than the penny slots. And it wasn't a month before the casinos called up and said, we need these on our maintenance guys and our security guys and on everybody because we want to measure their effectiveness. And so tracking is just growing. This is what's going on now with these little things in the NFL. We've got them on the pads of the players. And let me just tell you that we're this far from not the coach pulling out somebody, but the computer pulling out somebody, saying the last couple of times he ran that route, it was slower than it should have been. He's tired. And so these machines are going to augment, not replace, but augment our intelligence. This is a phone app that lets you look through the wall to see where the plumbing and the pipes are. This is a glove that translates sign language into speech. This is a rearview mirror that watches to see if your eyelids flutter, and it'll vibrate your seat, so it'll wake you up. This is my favorite new one. This is a Tostitos bag. When you turn it on, basically what it does is it says, all right, I'm ready. Now you breathe on it, and it said, you've had too much to drink. Okay? And so the idea of these devices making us smarter, helping us be more sort of accurate in our decision-making, all part of the process. Pill bottles that talk, the compliance is off the charts. This is a different kind of pill. You swallow it. We call it the light at the end of the tunnel in lieu of a colonoscopy. So, you know, we can get glasses at home. We can test for all kinds of ailments and things. This is a chip that you implant, and it has the drugs, and you actually dose yourself with something that looks very much like a garage door opener. These are smart garbage cans, and every morning it tells the truck whether to stop by or not. It's saving an enormous amount of time and money, really a powerful tool. And then this is my favorite. This is a wallet. So this idea of signaling you is really important. This wallet knows your budget. And as the month goes by, it gets harder and harder to open the wallet. Okay, so where are we going? All right, well, here's where we're going. Lots, and little, okay? Lots are the opportunities. Little is the functionality. We've got to build businesses that take advantage of the excesses and turn them into value for everybody. And if you can make it easy for me, that'll be terrific. And if not, I'll find somebody who can or who will. So I want to just leave you with the thought of how to sort of future-proof your business. And it's not easy. But we think of it in terms of CPR. So we think that businesses today have to be concerned across three dimensions. The first is this idea of consistency, that you have to constantly reinforce the value proposition, the value, the message, the information to the consumer, and anticipate the fact that their demands are going to continue to accelerate. You have to make that transaction important to them. And you have to be there all the time and at a moment's notice. That's number one. Two, this idea of all the time is significant because we're consuming at a frighteningly modest amount. The average conversation is about 32 seconds now. And so you have to figure out how to get in front of me, how to quickly deliver the pitch, how to customize it for me, how to use this technology so that it's pervasive but not invasive, so that it doesn't sort of flip over into creepiness. And then, you know, you have to understand the nature of the connection to your customers. And it's not about, you know, customers being locked in anymore. It's about customers every single transaction deciding whether they're getting real value and you continually reinforcing your connection to them. So I'm going to stop, but I do want to say one more thing, which is, sorry, sir, and that is that this is Rome. And so, as you know, Rome fell. We're of the view that it was because they didn't have cell phones. If they had cell phones, they would have known that they were surrounded by these other two very important cultures, the Mayan culture and the Chinese dynasties. We have a company in 1871 called Selfie. And what's significant about Selfie is the following, and this is just a little picture of the future, okay? Selfie is the first word in the history of man. God didn't make it, love didn't make it, peace didn't make it, to be the same word in every language in the world. How did it happen? Well, it happened because of globalization. It was upon these cultures before they had a chance to make up their own word for it, except the French, who think it's a French word. They're just full of shit. But the idea is that's the world we're living in today. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Howard. In case you're wondering about the future, we're in it right now. We have a couple of questions. We have time for a few. It's always delightful to have Howard here. It's an incredible session. This is from City Club member Ashvin Ladd. How do you assess the startup community's ability to stay ahead of public policy that may affect their business, both short and long term?
So today we would say that regulation lags innovation by about a decade, literally a decade. And with Uber, with Airbnb, what you're seeing increasingly is the startups are just going and doing it first and then asking for forgiveness. This is the classic sort of situation. What's going to happen as they get to scale is they're going to have to do a much better job of working with these regulatory bureaucracies and things like that. But the real goal, I think, is that they're going to provide examples for the larger corporations who have the infrastructure to do these things right and carefully. And they'll sort of be the canary in the coal mine. But once they've demonstrated these new needs, then we're going to have to move at scale to make them a part of our lives.
Thank you, Howard. This is from City Club member Joe Paragusas. If I butchered your name, I apologize. Where, if at all, do you see a role pathway for bricks and mortar and steel in the ground project developers going forward in the service economy?
Well, we think, I mean, look, Amazon is building more and more stores. It's just a question of what's a store going to look like. They're going to be much smarter stores. They're not going to have 55,000 items. They're going to have the items that the people in that community are most interested in purchasing. A lot of that will be shrinkage. So bricks and mortar is definitely going to change. But development and all of these kinds of things, those aren't going away as industries. We think they're just going to have to be a lot better about making smart decisions. And the good news is the technology enables that in really amazing ways. The city is deploying sensors across the whole city, and this is going to permit us to know and to measure traffic and things like that that used to be almost anecdotal. You know, you were trying to figure out the next location for your business. Now you're going to have data that's going to make that into a science rather than sort of a guess.
Great. Okay, we have a couple more interesting questions here. This is from Jim Parsons.
Can I just ask if there's some cannoli left at my table?
Okay. Not only that, but we're sending Judy home with a care package. Barb Pollock, who's been with you for a few years, she's also going to get a care package, so not to worry. Anyhow, With all the challenges that exist in many Chicago neighborhoods, what is 1871 doing to help build a pipeline for young people from diverse and undersourced backgrounds to succeed in their careers?
Okay, so now this is officially killing me because I can't tell you what we're doing until Monday. So, but on Monday, but on Monday we'll be announcing a whole new initiative in the education space at the high school level to help train and excite young people to be entrepreneurs. And let me just say, this couldn't be a better time because what's changed is not only are entrepreneurs rock stars today, and smart has become the new handsome, but in addition to that, it's turned out that the other two careers that kids in high school aspire to, being a jock or being a rock star, both of those, they've started to figure out those careers suck, and that would be a big help. But what's more amazing than that is that all the rock stars want to be entrepreneurs, and all the jocks for sure want to be entrepreneurs. And so it's coming our way. This is the time for the city and for the educational sort of community to seize upon the opportunity to give these kids a reason not to say that school is the most boring place they go every day.
Okay. We'll look forward to that announcement on Monday, Howard. Tom Moore, City Club member Tom Moore. How has President Trump's Muslim travel ban affected your global business?
It really hasn't affected it. I know that there are businesses that are thinking about whether certain of their employees should travel right now. But one of the things that's changed is we're all using video conferencing and video technology to do a great deal more of communicating. And frankly, we've even got robots at 1871 that permit us to sort of do tours and things. So we'll see some shrinkage, but it actually is shrinkage that was unrelated really to the Trump ban.
And in case you were paying such close attention to what Howard was saying, you missed certain things, we do a podcast of all of our programs, so you can catch it on the podcast. This is from Jamie Constant, who's with Morgan Stanley. He's using code. What's the status of Chicago VC?
Okay. So Chicago Venture Capital is doing great. Last year we had about $1.7 billion invested in about 173 companies. The year before, it was even greater than that. And we've had significant exits, several multi-billion dollar exits. The rankings across the United States are that other than Silicon Valley, which is really not sort of in the comparative set, that Chicago is like number one, two, or three in all of these measurements with respect to venture capital. What's important to understand, though, is that capital is important, talent is important, but where we really hit it out of the park is with respect to customers. And businesses that don't have customers really don't have anything in the long run.
And I apologize to Jamie for not recognizing VC, but when this professor went to grad school, the words didn't exist.
It was VD okay. When you went to grad
Absolutely.
School.
This is from Microsoft's Adam Heckman. What will it take for telcos to absorb the friction-free customer interaction message? You understand that?
Well, I don't think it's limited to telcos. I think it's the case with respect to cable companies and all kinds of providers of service. And I think the biggest problem is that we promote away from the front door. If somebody's really good on the front line, we make them a manager, which is crazy because then we have to replace them with somebody who's not as good. And so, you know, frontline service is going to change. One of the ways we're seeing a change is with bots, which permit people sitting at these service desks, CSRs, to do a better job of answering questions instead of saying, wait, I'll put you on hold and I'll get a supervisor, which is actually like everyone's nightmare. So using bots, using sort of decision support and augmented intelligence tools, we think we'll solve a lot more customer service issues at the front line, and they won't have to consume time, and that'll actually make all of those businesses more responsive to their customers.
Okay, thank you. Let's give Howard a big round of applause.